Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking with comic book artist Liz Prince about her new book, Tomboy, a graphic memoir. I'm very happy now to welcome Christy Green. She is a landscape designer and activist. She's the founder of Radical, which is spelled radical like particle, C-L-E at the end. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Now, I have just learned about your work fairly recently because you've been doing, and we've missed some of it, but it's still going on. You've been doing a six-month series called Consumption and Waste, and it's about what we value, devalue, discard, consume, hide, and reveal through our choices and actions. What inspired this?
That's such a mouthful. Isn't that just
it
an immediate turnoff to most people?
No. It's,
all those words.
It's fantastic because it makes you think about, I mean, there was somebody said, you know, you can't throw it away. There is no away.
That's right. Yeah, what is the away? That's always been fascinating to me, like this idea that we get to flip this switch and we get to choose like a light switch cover that looks pretty, right? And we can have dimmers and all of this, so we get to actually have something instantaneously and we don't necessarily even know where it comes from or what the consequences of that luxury, what the consequences are. And I don't know, I guess I've just always found it interesting, and I think especially in my work and working with people and their relationships to nature, whatever nature is, has really brought up a lot of questions for me. And I guess, first of all, I want to say I don't think I'm an expert. I don't have the answers, and I'm certainly not the poster child for, you know, being, you know, the best conservationist ever. I just really want to have the conversation. So it's about whether it has to do with, you know, soil, water, trash, electricity, you name it. I just am really interested in what we take for granted, basically, and dispose of, and this idea, like you say, of what is this away, you know?
Well, right. I mean, and that you did the first event, which was last month, about what you call waste, spaces of waste and neglect in the landscape.
Well, actually, the first event was in May. It was May 16th,
okay.
And that was Richard Jennings, and he's a local crazy person too, thank goodness. And he looks at we use his system.
He is amazing. He's an incredible guy. I used to work for him when I first moved here, doing data entry in the tofu company he
ran. Right, exactly. Well, we use a lot of his systems. I shouldn't say use, I hate that word. Incorporate his systems of gray water and black water in our landscape design, you know, systems. But he gave a talk on wastewater in the perennial stream from the toilet or from gray water sources within the house. And then we also sell his products at Radical, and his products are like soil microbes and humic acids and a soil tonic. So he was our first person feature. I'm calling them, I guess, featured activists or artists, or, you know, just kind of regular people who are doing things in their own way to make a difference. And then we had Adrienne Barrett, and she did the parts of plants and animals that we typically throw away, that we think are to be discarded or ugly or gross or not useful. And that was really great. We had lots of tastings of good food, tops of carrots, you know, elk liver, you name it. And then
tops,
I think,
of carrots.
Right. And
I never thought of eating tops of carrots.
Well, they're good just as chopped up in a salad. She used them in a smoothie with peach pulp to do, I'm not in a smoothie, well, in smoothies, but also in fruit leathers. So these parts that have all kinds of nutrients, whether they're for us or for the soil. But again, how is it then in our daily choices and actions do we demonstrate what we value? So, and if we do choose to throw the carrot top away, can we at least give it to the chickens or put it into the soil or something else so that it perpetuates life, I guess,
right,
instead of causing some problem?
Yeah. I knew somebody who loved to garden, and when she weeded, she would say, I'm sorry, weeds, I have to pull you up, but you're going to go into the compost.
Yes, that's right. Or at least, I guess a lot of people I work with, you know, I get to do landscape design build for clients, and I've been able to do that for 15 years in Santa Fe, and I feel really privileged because I work with all kinds of people. I work in tiny backyards. I work on 500-acre ranches, and I feel like what I get to do is have people, again, ask the question or consider the choice, right, and have it be conscious. So if it's a weed, we have to get rid of these weeds. Or so it's sort of, well, what is a weed and why is it a weed? And do we want to leave it? Do we want to just cut it? Do we want to leave the root in the ground? Do we want to feed it to the goats? Do we want to feed it to the chickens? Do we want to cover it with sheet mulch? I mean, there's all kinds of options around every choice there is. And how can, I guess what I'm interested in is how to cultivate at least a conscious choice that isn't somehow a more true reflection of value, and hopefully I mean, in my mind, the value is something that's going to be, you know, of benefit, not detriment.
I think also, I mean, when I hear you talking, I think, you know, in terms of weeds, it's like, instead of just thinking about getting rid of weeds, you think about how they belong and what is this whole ecosystem before mm-hmm. before we had at it in the mm-hmm. first place.
Mm-hmm. That, and I'm just completely blown away almost on a daily basis by how, and I am a human obviously, but how self-righteous and arrogant we are and what we think we can just do and impose on systems, natural systems, earth systems, soil, water, you name it. So not only what we can take from it at will, whenever we feel like it, at whatever scale, but also then what we put back into it that's basically like our unwanted crap, right? And somehow that's just supposed to go away or be okay, and then the earth is supposed to just keep taking it on and on and on. And I think that's something that it's just a huge assumption that I think we make in little ways and big ways every day that I'm just really interested in and having a conversation about. And the whole series on consumption and waste for me was, you know, as a landscape architect, landscape designer, I think we can take ourselves really seriously about design and especially making things pretty. And I actually am more interested in the things that aren't pretty and the things that are really imperfect and kind of stinky and dirty and ugly. And then how can we do something or talk about it in a different way instead of it being a bunch of information where people's eyes glaze over, or where here's another statistic or something that's so overwhelming or depressing we just can't stand to hear about it anymore, so we go to our escape route, you know, whatever that is. And so I was hoping in this series of consumption and waste to say, hey, these are the people I know who are right here who are just doing very simple daily things, and how can we do something through beauty or through the flavor of food or through humor that opens a conversation in a different way. So it's an alternative way to look at alternative ways of being, you know. So, and that to me is just having humor, you know, is a lot easier to communicate, it seems like, with people than saying, here's another pamphlet to read through and decide if you want to give money or something. Not that that's horrible, but yeah, just different ways of communicating.
Well, speaking of humor, the fabulous Dave Stafford is going to be at Radical this coming Friday, the 5th of September.
Mm-hmm.
And he is, I think, one of the funniest people I've ever known.
Yeah, he's the funniest person I've ever met, for sure. And David and I met, I guess it was about 17 or 18 years ago, and we had, right away, our eyes lit up when we realized what we had in common was a love for worms and for compost. And he was, you know, yeah, and is the worm wrangler. And
he's a worm wrangler?
He is, absolutely. Yes, he has to wear his lab coat for that function, but yes, he is. And yeah, he's hilarious, and he's so intelligent and inspired and so up on current events, and the way he communicates about issues that are really pretty depressing is refreshing and palatable, I think, you know, because the entree is wit.
Right.
So he actually has produced about 45 different posters for this event. He's produced hundreds of postcards, and the postcards are going to be addressed and stamped to local representatives, so people can actually just fill out what they want if they want to do something that's activist-ish. And then we have posters and some silkscreen t-shirts that talk about legacy, and he's asking the question of what legacy will you leave? Are we going to leave a legacy of inaction, of apathy, or of, you know, paying attention in whatever way? So it should be really fun. And at every event, it's on a Friday. We usually do one a month, and we have a featured activist of the month. And we always have food and drink, and they're free and open to the public. And it's usually a pretty eclectic group of people that come. So, yeah.
And what time is it at?
5 until 8, and we're on Lena Street, 1703 Lena.
Yeah.
So yeah, come on by.
So that's on your way to the iconic coffee shop.
That's right. Yeah, we're
on
in
Lena
what
Street. You can't miss
right.
it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we used to be what was known as the Blue Door. There was a sort of warehouse space there called the Blue Door, and some people know us by that. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to think about legacy. By the way, we're talking to Christy Green about landscape and waste and this series that she's doing called Consumption and Waste. It's interesting to think about legacy, because sometimes I was thinking about it when my little dogs died in February, and we buried her, mm-hmm. and all she left behind was her collar.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. And then her little body is in the ground. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice if when my time is up, I could just leave nothing and be forgotten? There's some, you know, be loved for a little while by the few people left or whatever, and then just be, like, just be done.
I think so. I really appreciate you saying that. I've always wondered, well, why can't, I mean, what I would want to be is put in the compost pile or dropped off somewhere in the ditch or whatever, because look how many forms of life would benefit from my body, right?
Right.
And that's one of the most intriguing things to me is that in our culture, how many ways we hide and obscure what is really happening, whether it's through, with life and death or with products of waste, right? So we cover it up and try to make it somehow more comfortable. And, you know, the body as it decays is actually, to me, really fascinating. And it's all the things of life, just as much as life is, right? So what your dog left, I mean, I know you know, and whether you saw it literally is all kinds of food for the soil and microorganisms and the series of decomposers that come. And why isn't that just as much about life and beauty as whatever's pretty above ground, you know?
Right, except, you know, except that we miss them.
That, of course.
Their
but can we
souls.
Yeah. Can we actively miss them by seeing them, too, and how they decompose, or is that too shocking or scary? I don't know.
I don't know, yeah. I want to get back to what you were talking about with landscapes of neglect and, like, vacant lots. And what tell us your thinking about those kinds of spaces.
Oh, well, it's this the idea, I guess, that there's a place that's supposed to be pretty and there's a space that's not. And whether it's a back of a building or an alleyway or even, you know, think of all the medians here in Santa Fe that aren't attended to in any way. And I don't mean that they have to have pretty flowers. I just mean that there's some sort of intention to a place that's supposedly not valuable. And, you know, there's all kinds of things happening in urban areas across the country, converting vacant lots to edibles. Community gardens, you name it, places for wildlife. In fact, you know, like in Detroit, the wildlife's coming in. People are actually hunting turkeys and raccoons again as a way of feeding themselves, right? So I guess it's just, again, questioning what is a place that's to be valued or a place that's, you know, kind of thrown away visually or otherwise. And so is it okay to just let weeds or trash be strewn there? And what does that mean to us in a society and what we're explicitly valuing and how we value that? And then the other big place, like a larger scale, I'm really interested in as a landscape architect person is the places in rural areas, especially mines. And then I just did my thesis work up in North Dakota on what's happening up there in the fracking industry. And again, looking at these places so we get to drive our cars and we get to flip the switch here in the city. And supposedly as landscape architects, we're supposed to be focusing on work in urban areas almost exclusively. And to me, I think that these other areas that we don't see, where our food comes from, our water, our energy, those are other places of neglect in a different scale. But also just looking at the idea of covenants, you know, homeowners association covenants, and saying, okay, we can't have chain link fences, you know, or we can't have concrete, or we can't have X, Y, and Z because it's, quote, obnoxious. So that's an indicator of ugliness or neglect. And so I'm just challenging or trying to challenge those sort of assumptions and ideas of something being better than the other or more valuable than the other.
Well, there is something like when a vacant lot is transformed and people start doing raised beds and putting compost and then putting gardens and the before and after, it's like goes from ugly to beautiful. And I feel like what's happening is it's going from neglected and useless to like useful, nurturing, and sort of part of the life process that you were talking about.
I think that's one way, but again, I guess I'd have to question, is that the only way to activate beauty or usefulness? For instance, there's one graduate student at UNM that I got to be in studio with, and she's an artist, and she took a vacant lot. It was our study site for our design. And she took a vacant lot, and she had gone around to all these Salvation Armies and gotten all these teddy bears, different size, shapes, you know, colors of teddy bears. At night, she put all these teddy bears out in this vacant lot. And then she documented and filmed what happened. What was the interaction, the response that was prompted by that action of putting the teddy bears? And that informed her design. It also just informed her about, well, how do people relate to this place? And it was sort of like this aha of, wow, look at this soft, cuddly thing. Look at this pretty thing. Is this okay for me to take? People went into the vacant lot. You know, they crossed in different ways. They moved in it in different ways. So it was a really fun way of seeing that space differently and activating the space. And I think I'm really interested in change over time. So something that's short term like that, that could be for a week, can activate a space, or some other person can have an idea. So I don't think it's one person who has just an edible bed and isn't that wonderful, which it is, but there are multiple ways that are creative and interactive too, to activate space.
So what happened to the teddy bear lot?
So a lot of them disappeared or got rearranged in certain ways, and then she ultimately used the interaction for her design, which was, you know, in landscape architecture, it was landscape oriented, but the lot stayed, you know, it was academic, purely academic. Nothing happened there besides, I mean, what she had happened, but nothing got installed, in other words, like permanently, so to speak.
Tell us more about your work in North Dakota in these fracking areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a place where, you know, the oil boom has come and gone. Oil's been known to be there since the 50s. But now, because of the new technology of fracking, as we know, it's happening in so many places like New Mexico, Texas, California, so on. It's happening at such an extreme rate in North Dakota, and I have a really deep relationship with the place and the people there. And landscape is always that. It's people and place, right, in relationship to, and our stories of who we are in regards to the place and who we become. And so I was horrified the last 6 or 7 years that I've been going up there by all the changes that have been happening. You know, in some places there are more than 8 above-ground drilling rigs per square mile, 14 frack lines below ground per square mile. And I kept thinking, why isn't everybody absolutely horrified? Why aren't the people, especially the stakeholders here, the people who live here, who are from here, who rely on this place, who love this place, why aren't they, you know, sort of saying no? And of course the answer is money. You know, some people are earning up to $100,000 a month in royalties. I mean, and that's probably low end now. And I was just up there in August again, and you know, they've now topped the million barrels a day amount of oil they're extracting. So basically I just looked at, in my thesis, the cultural and ecological impact of the fracking. So what's happening to the wildlife species, the vegetation, and also people's way of life, because, you know, population's growing by like 12% there compared to like 3% nationally. So there's this huge influx of people from all over the country and the world working and utilizing systems that aren't ready for that type of impact. And so again, I thought, well, how can I, as a landscape designer, landscape architect, do something that's not just soapbox information? And so I propose, the design is actually based on the cultural framework of the state of North Dakota's Recreation Department and then the Game and Fish Department. So the ecological framework is based on their report. And it's basically a large-scale sort of land art installation that's ecologically regenerative, and it takes place over a 1,000-mile loop through the 17 oil-producing counties in North Dakota. So it's something to be experienced. It's visually shocking to people to see, and it's to be experienced by vehicle and also by recreational route.
So what does it look like?
So the recreational route pieces, they basically are showing that which is happening below ground that's invisible. So the recreational route include canoe trails, snowmobile trails, horseback trails, bike trails, and pedestrian trails. So people walk along these places where the frack lines are beneath the ground that they can't see. And so they are these 6-inch recycled drilling rig pipes that extend. There are 6 of them that go for a mile above the frack line, and they're painted red. And they have holes in them, and they are filled with native plant seed of that region, of that ecoregion. And so they're, in essence, kind of like a large-scale bird feeder. But then they're illuminated at night. People can see them. And then also there's a QR code at each of these sites that tells the information about what's happening in that particular region, what species, like the Sprague's pipit or the bighorn sheep or the sage grouse, that are at risk. So people, it's an educational experience and hopefully a visceral experience.
And when you say regenerative, I mean, do those seeds then get planted?
They do, by the birds and by wind, by dynamic ecological process. And the other thing about them is they're set atop a 10-foot-wide burned swath as sort of this metaphor for our carbon footprint. But both the seed that's in these and the burn are prescriptions by the Department of Game and Fish in North Dakota. They don't say to do it in this way that I'm proposing, but they say, yes, that's part of ecological regeneration, is to help propagate native vegetation for wildlife habitat and then also prescribe burns. And the vehicular route is similar, except you see it just visually as you pass by, and they're recycled oil drums that are also filled with seed and with water, and they spread. They stretch for the mile-long length of the frack line, and those depend on the people in North Dakota who love to hunt and love to shoot guns. They depend on people there shooting them and releasing the seed in the water for future propagation.
What are some of the... You talked about the risks to wildlife and culture in this in these fracking zones in North Dakota. Mm-hmm. What have you actually seen in terms of damage to mm-hmm. to land, mm-hmm. creatures, plants, people?
Mm-hmm. It's a good question, and there's, if you want a lot of information on it, there are all kinds of reports from the state of North Dakota, especially the Game and Fish Department. But mostly what it is fracturing or fragmenting of habitat. So this is ecologically speaking and culturally speaking. So all of the roads that are there are numerous, and then you add all of the miles and miles of roads. And so say for every well that's drilled, that's an additional 10,000 truck trips to set the rig up, to frack the hole, to import the frack fluid, export the wastewater fluid. There are over 373 wastewater disposal sites, so that means wells where we inject the water, the wastewater, back into the ground. So if you can imagine, in 17 counties, 373 wastewater sites, all the sand and gravel pits that support the roads that are being made, all the truck trips, and that's, like I said, for just one well. So if you imagine
10,000 truck trips
per well, right, and that's to get it drilled, that's not for its life. And so they're talking about 30 to 40 years of this, thousands and thousands of wells, you know, going forward. And culturally, people whose way of life was once very quiet, rural, communal in some ways, like knowing everybody and being able to walk safely to and from school or whatever else, now you have this huge influx of people who aren't from there or necessarily invested in the place. There's a much more sense of crime. There's crime happening. There are the man camps. There's this huge influx of men who have some bit of free time on their hands with not a whole lot to do. So the way people live in the place and live in terms of growing food as a way of life, you know, the agriculture was the number one industry in North Dakota. Now it's second to oil and gas. And then recreating in the place, like whether it's, you know, going to the lake to fish or going hunting, you know, all of that is impacted by the population, the traffic, the water pollution, and who knows what's happening to the aquifers, right, that were supposedly safe to penetrate for the wastewater because they're all encased in concrete. That's another issue. But
And so one wonders when all of this is done, because extractive industries extract and leave and rarely clean up after themselves, mm-hmm. what's left?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. That's part of why I think it's one thing that I've always been... It's really bothered me about landscape architecture, what we are supposed to do as a profession, to decorate and reclaim, and that's sort of what we get relegated to, you know, make things pretty before and after. But I think the whole part of the intent in this design proposal is to actually call attention to something before it's dead, you know, like a pre-memorial, saying, hey, look at something before it's too late, and is there something that we can do now, and do you realize, you know, this is what's happening to the water, to the wildlife species, and so on. And again, in a way, I hope that's visceral, that's emotional. I think that's the role of art in this, rather than just science and statistics and information. It's how can we feel something so in such a compelling way that we choose something different or we act on it.
We're talking to landscape designer and activist Christy Green. Now, you have done water conservation projects, landscaping projects here in New Mexico, here in Santa Fe.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. I guess I'm laughing sort of because I think that's what we do, hopefully, everywhere we work, whether it's somebody's backyard or I've been really lucky to get a few grants from U.S. Fish and Wildlife and from the NRCS for water conservation on agricultural properties. Natural Resource Conservation Service of USDA. Worked on a 7-acre farm in Elwique, and we got to change the flood irrigation to a different, less water-consumptive and erosive system. And right now I'm doing a partners project through U.S. Fish and Wildlife with a group, my neighborhood, the La Resolana community, along the Santa Fe River. And so we're doing landform grading there and planting native vegetation and conserving soil and water. And then just at people's properties, most of how we do water conservation is through soil building and then using effluent and wastewater for irrigation, so gray water and black water, and then water harvesting, you know, active water harvesting and passive water harvesting through surface catchment.
So the ongoing series, Consumption and Waste, continues this Friday. Dave Stafford, who is a satirist and writer and illustrator and all-around talented guy, is going to be talking about all kinds of things, including fossil fuel extraction and consumption. And he's going to have, as you mentioned, posters and other objects of art. And that is this coming Friday. Remind us again what time?
September 5th, 5 to 8 p.m. on at Lena Street, 1703 Lena Street at Radical.
1703 Lena Street at Radical. And then there's another event in October, the 3rd of October, and we will announce that when the time comes. And, of course, food and drink will be there. Now, tell us just a little bit more about the shop and what you have over there.
Oh, okay, sure. Radical, I don't know how many of you know, but R-A-D-I-C-L-E is a different type of radical. This one is the one that's the – do you know what it is? By the way?
No.
It's the first root that emerges once a seed is germinated.
Oh, okay.
So that's a radical. It's an actual, it's a noun, it's a thing.
Right.
And, but anyway, so that's kind of this expression of something that's old and rooted and something that's new and evolving and changing. And that's thanks to Big Swing, by the way, the local marketing firm, communications firm. They're the ones that help with that. But Radical, so we do landscape architecture design build. That's our primary business. Right now, twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 to 2, the shop is open. And we have really high-quality garden tools there. We have these handmade aprons, reversible one-of-a-kind aprons. We have handmade utility aprons the women at Upcycled Fashion Mora are making for us. We have some very nice water bottles. They're glass water bottles that we sell. We have lots of potted plants, edibles, and succulents in repurposed containers. And there's also
like kind old lampshades.
Like old lampshades and colanders. I just planted some cutting mix, lettuce cutting mix, and some colanders and things like that. So, again, it's a way to, for those of us who don't have time to have a landscaper to hire somebody to do it, there's a little bit of landscape in a pot or in a different way of seeing an old thrown away container. And there's also a kind of demonstration slash activist space out front that's kind of a living, living canvas of landscape activism in the front of the shop. And each of these events, the consumption and waste events, features a person, an activist type person or in Santa Fe, and their wares that are for sale the month that they are featured.
Excellent. Well, Christy Green, I want to thank you very much for being with us on the Radio Cafe, landscape designer and activist, founder of Radical, which is on the web at beradical.com, B-E-R-A-D-I-C-L-E.com. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.